daily testing, weekly testing, anything else in terms of testing you do? Do you collect any psychological data?
No, we don't. I had tried in the past to use questionnaires, but very difficult for compliance, especially because I'm not there in person every day. So it was a lot of either forgetting or even worse, you know, they'd answer like an hour into their training session, but then I wasn't there. So I had no idea, like, were they already training or, you know, were they, did they actually do it accurately before training? So in theory, I think it could be useful, but unless I was there full time.
Okay, Jack, it's awesome to have you at Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself, that would be great.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. First off, big fan of the show.
Thank you.
So my name is Jake Slayton. I am the sports scientist for Power and Grace Performance. We are a U.S.-based weightlifting team. I'm also a senior research specialist at Emory University's Sport Performance and Research Center and currently a PhD student at Robert Gordon University.
Oh, I didn't know that. What is your thesis about?
So the actual research topic, I just started this. This is my first semester. I'm doing it remotely. It is, we're planning on using a lot of the data we actually collect with Power and Grace, and the idea is using a Bayesian statistical paradigm approach to some impulse response modeling and fitness fatigue models and trying to figure out ways to validate measures of training load and how you can use those to make like boutique prediction models that coaches can use if they have a setup like we do, where you can input some data and you can get some prediction. And then maybe that can kind of guide, you know, nuances in the training. So, but that's down the road right now. It's a lot of reading and literature review and writing reviews and stuff.
How long will it take you, you think?
I'm part-time because work, but it's an interesting model. So it's in the UK. So you just get done when you're done. So it could take me, I'm fast, maybe 3 years. If I'm slow, maybe 6 years. I guess I'll kind of figure out as I go. It does help that, you know, data collection is the hard part, but we're just using data that I would be collecting either way with that. At least we have at Power and Grace. That makes it, helps out a lot with the time scale.
That sounds amazing. So I have a bunch of questions for you prepared for today. I have questions I prepared myself, and then I have a few questions from patrons. So if there's anything you want to add at any point, please do.
Okay, I'll see you.
Could we go a little bit more in depth on your role at Power and Grace and maybe a little bit about the gym too at the club, how it functions, what kind of athletes are there and what the goals athletes have. So the audience have a bit of an idea, what is your work environment like?
Yeah, so we actually spent about a year, we have our own space just for the team. We used to be located at a CrossFit gym, like a lot of weightlifting clubs are, but we have our own space. So my role as the sports scientist, I would definitely consider part-time. So I'm not there every day. I am there every Saturday, but responsibilities for me is as far as the handling the data, analyzing and kind of, you know, the person that does that. So setting up systems in place to make sure the data is being collected, it's being stored in the right place, it's, you know, being used correctly, that sort of thing. So a lot of it is not, that I do is not in person. I collect the data in person when there's testing. We do weekly jump testing, which I'm sure we'll get into on the force plates, but a lot of it is just handling the data. One of our coaches, Angela, she collects some daily jump data that I'm sure we'll just discuss. And, you know, she does a great job with that. And I kind of handle the analyzing the data on the back end. But as far as the club and the environment, the culture, I would say we really pride ourselves on the team atmosphere we have. So, you know, we have a wide variety of skill levels. It could range from, you know, we have some lifters that competed at the 2020 Olympics, Olympic hopefuls, international team members, medalists at the national level, all the way down to, you know, people trying to qualify for like the Arnold or smaller national meets. So we have a pretty wide ranging demographic. I would say something I think is, you know, draws me to our team, I think is very cool, is that atmosphere is, you know, if you're a Team USA team member on Power and Grace and you train at HQ, you're treated the same way. It's the same job as the athlete that, you know, is just trying to qualify for the first American Open. They might have just started weightlifting. It's kind of the same level of everybody's equal. Everybody's trying to support each other to reach their goals, whether the goal is trying to win gold medal at Olympics or I just want to learn how to correctly do a snatch. And so I think that's super interesting. And as far as the sports science goes, it's really nice nice that we do have a wide range of the athletes. You know, we are fortunate enough to have some highly skilled lifters, but also having, you know, from novice to elite level, that kind of spreads out the demographic and, you know, can allow for some unique analyses into, you know, skill levels and what that may be, look like.
Did you say where the gym is located?
So we are located about 45 minutes east of Atlanta, Georgia in the U.S. and Lawrenceville, Georgia. So we have our own spot there. It's a smaller town in the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia. And we also, one of our coaches, Brennan, has a gym he actually built in his barn up in upstate New York. And he has a pretty good sized group of lifters. We call that a HQ North because it's up north in the States. But he actually has, you know, like a good bit of people that train in his barn where he has platforms and equipment and all that. And he coaches them in person.
That's amazing. Okay, so let's go deep into what we are here for. If you could go through first all the testing you do and how often and what you do with the data, and then maybe all the other data you might be collecting on volume or other aspects.
Yeah, so we daily or before every afternoon session, we collect counter movement, jump height, hands on the hips, max effort, get a few reps. Our jump mat, which just calculates it from flight time. Weekly, we collect some jumps on our, we have a set of dual force plates. So we collect jumps weekly every Saturday morning before training. We do squat jumps, so really drop down to 90 degree knee angle, hold that position, and then jump straight up from that position, kind of eliminating the stretch shortening cycle. And then we do a counter movement jump on the force plate as well. We also have a couple of velocity, our barbell velocity tracking units. So we use Perch Fit units, and they use a computer vision to track barbell velocity. So it's like a camera you set up in the squat rack, and it kind of calculates based on bar displacement and its line of sight.
Do you have to put any markers on the bar to get this one rolling? No,
actually you don't. It's actually pretty interesting. So for that one, I guess we can start with that one, what we use that for. Right now, the goal is, and what I'm starting to put together is, it's a newer brand of velocity unit. So, you know, fluidity, reliability, making sure it's consistently measuring how it should, measurement error is acceptable, but then also, you know, is it valid against more gold standard, whether that be motion capture with the markers, or if you want to consider like a highly validated velocity unit that's already been validated compared against that. But with the barbell tracking, you know, we use it a lot, or Spencer uses it a lot for some of his athletes for prescribing mean velocities he wants them to hit on, say back squat or front squat or the clean pull. I'm starting to pull all that data and look at it more from like a monitoring perspective, looking at how this may change throughout the training cycles from mesocycle to mesocycle or macrocycle to macrocycle across the movements. As far as the daily jump mat goes, the approach there is we think of it as kind of like looking at acute fatigue. So how are they looking coming in that session compared to previous sessions? Are they kind of elevated? Are they depressed? Ideas that gives us some insight into, you know, neuromuscular function as they go in that training session based off of, some of the recent previous tests on the jump mat.
Do you adjust based on the outcome, or you just collect the data just to know?
Yeah. So as far as adjusting training, there is, I would say it goes into part of like the decision-making process that say like Spencer may make with his athletes that given day. So say he had an athlete and in his head, maybe their snatches, he's going to leave kind of open-ended. Like he wants them to hit 92%, but they're feeling good. He may let them go up a little bit, or it's kind of, he has some wiggle room. If it looks noticeable and based off of conversations with them, with addition to the jump data from the jump mat, that may help guide him in a decision of, man, we're going to be a little more conservative, or maybe like, oh, are you feeling good today? And then he might in his head be like, oh, I'm going to let them have a little bit more wiggle room, maybe try some heavier weight. I wouldn't say it's used as like a hard and fast, like, you know, kind of like red light, green light, like, oh, nope, let's shut it down, or all right, let's go all out. Nor do I think it should be, because it's not, you know, the idea is it measures readiness, but readiness is contextual. We don't even, what are we saying they're ready for? So it's just a small piece of the puzzle that goes into the decision making. But yeah, I would be thinking of that as more of like acute fatigue. How are they feeling on the session? And typically what it does is, say you have an athlete who's like, they're like, whoa, this is like, they're trending in the wrong direction this past week. Like they're not jumping as high. That may then allow, say, the coach or Spencer to go up to him and be like, hey, is anything going on? Are you feeling okay? Because might be something, you know, a contextual factor outside of the gym. And it's just a conversation that you need to have with an athlete that maybe you didn't even really need to know you needed to broach, or they weren't going to come to you and talk about it. But then this is kind of a conversation to, you know, maybe other things going on is, kind of the way we like to use it. Just a small piece of the puzzle.
Okay, so we covered readiness. So the testing, jump testing before the training session in the afternoon, then the squat rack arrangement you have for prescription, yeah. Say. So the athlete is trying to hit certain velocity in, let's say, front squat or back squat or pull. And could you tell us about the Saturday measurements, how they are used?
Yes. So the Saturday, you know, it's, they're jumping once again, but they're on force plates. So you're going to get the, you know, some kinetics out of it, kind of look at the movement strategy and components of the jump. And what we use that for, and that's really the most built out, robust testing we had thus far, because we've been doing it at this point, like consistently for a year, give or take, you know, technical malfunctions. But we use that. I think of that as more program efficacy. So looking at, you know, say it's the first mesocycle in training, and the goal is like more, I guess you could call it like strength endurance or like hypertrophy here. You know, they're getting a lot of volume, ideas to develop this work capacity, maybe accrue some muscle mass. You would expect some neuromuscular function to be depressed, right? And so maybe we can look at the jumps at beginning to end of that mesocycle and say, wow, like the concentric impulse or the peak power is depressed. So we kind of, based off of the research, assume that we gave them enough volume. And then conversely, if you're more towards like the taper close to competition, we can see if it's slightly elevated compared to, say, their previous point or compared to, you know, month prior. But that's more, we use that more as like, is the program working? And it's more of a, you know, macroscopic view of cycle to cycle rather than just like day-to-day acute fatigue. Not saying it can't tell us anything about fatigue, but we primarily use that for seeing if the program is working how it should from like neuromuscular mechanisms. And is there certain qualities in an athlete that maybe we're trying to enhance with training? Are we actually improving those? And you would expect to see increases in like impulse or peak force during the squat jump or counter movement jump. It's kind of dependent on the athlete.
So daily testing, weekly testing, anything else in terms of testing you do?
No, right now that's primarily it. We have the force plates, the jump mat, and the velocity units.
Okay, I have a question. So these are the athletes that are already on the team. If you are enrolling a new athlete, does it change anything, or they jump in into the testing protocol you have for all the other athletes?
Yeah, so they, if you know, if you're HQ athlete in person, you're immersed in it, so you're getting the same experience. Obviously, there's going to be a period where you're kind of learning how to do the test. So there might be a little bit of a learning curve where maybe that data isn't necessarily the most useful in retrospect. When you look back, you're like, oh, they just didn't really know what they were doing. But no, they go right into it. The velocity tracking, the barbell velocity tracking, is something that's more, you know, newer athletes are probably not going to do as much. Just when there's a feeling of a need for a more nuanced approach to training. So over time, it's kind of been realized that while this athlete is strong, not necessarily moving that weight quick enough. So like, you know, their velocity is kind of, you know, the same across all loads. You might have an athlete that's like very, you know, they move very fast, but then you hit their velocity threshold is not, you know, very low. Like they have to move in the bar fast. So once they've been there a little bit, then we kind of integrate the velocity tracking in with them, just because we get a better idea of what type of athlete they are and what needs they may have in training. But yeah, as soon as we get your new athlete HQ and you're part of our team, we're having you do the jump mat stuff and we're having you do the force plate stuff, and then it is communicated to your coach and to you, and you're part of it.
Okay. Do you collect any psychological data?
No, we don't. I had tried in the past to use questionnaires, but very difficult for compliance, especially because I'm not there in person every day. So it was a lot of either forgetting, or even worse, you know, they'd answer like an hour into their training session, but then I wasn't there. So I had no idea, like, were they already training, or, you know, were they, did they actually do it accurately before training? So in theory, I think it could be useful, but unless I was there full time, I think that'd be the only feasible way. And even then, it may still be somewhat challenging. I think there's probably some sports scientists that can attest that even if you're in there, watch them doing the surveys repeatedly, like it still may not be the most, you know, you may not get the most out of it that you'd like. More so psychologically, once again, I think it's more, I think, you know, when you kind of want to sign up to be a like lift with Power and Grace or have a Power and Grace coach, you're interviewed beforehand to kind of see like, maybe are you going to be a culture fit? Is this going to be a good relationship? And then all of our coaches, I feel like with all their athletes, do a pretty good job of developing their relationship where they'll very communicate to one another, or it might be, you know, in person. Once again, with like the jump stuff, maybe that leads to a conversation. So the psychological stuff, I would say, is more of a very, you know, loose approach where it's coach talking to athlete more so than having like an actual quantifying psychological measures.
Do you get your athletes to monitor sleep or anything related to recovery?
So we don't get them to, you know, a lot of our athletes do have like the Oura rings or the, you know, their whoop that tracks like sleep, HRV, body temperature, all that kind of stuff. You know, I think that is an idea that we had kind of pitched around. You know, a lot of the athletes on our team that have those devices are also very like bought in and like in touch with like the data we're collecting. So they like to have those conversations. So usually you kind of talk to them about it. And once again, it's still more of a subjective, like, oh, how have you been sleeping? How's, you know, heart rate, like that. You know, we try to be minimally invasive with like the sports science stuff with the athletes, because we don't want them to like, you know, start dragging their feet or being like, oh, I don't want to do this. And then the effort is low, the data isn't good. And so just kind of that line of like, that is their personal data being collected constantly, and we would need them to provide that to us. I think there's kind of that barrier, but I think in the future, that is a possible interest for athletes that are interested in like helping us out with that, because they're the one with the devices wearing them all the time. But it could just be as easy as, you know, an athlete writing down their training log, how many hours of sleep they got, which I think some of them do. But with all of us kind of being part-time in our roles at Power and Grace, it's slow moving, implementing the sports science we want to implement. So it takes a little bit longer to get something built out and efficiently running as compared to like if I was there full time. So if we were to do that, it's probably a little bit lower on the priority list right now, like how we would take those psychological or subjective measures or measures like sleep or HRV. Right now, it's more of the how ways we can use the force plate, which, you know, we have new tests we're trying to kind of figure out, or how can we analyze the velocity data, that sort of thing. And with weightlifting, you know, it is a unique setting for sports science because, you know, it's an individual sport, not reporting to an organization, and like a lot you can do. You have a lot of freedom with the testing as long as you're an athlete buy-in, that sort of thing. You're not kind of constrained by team, sport, organization, that sort of thing. So there's like, you know, constantly, you know, me and Spencer chatting about different things that are possibilities, but you kind of have to keep it narrowed in and one thing at a time. You know, they're already weightlifting and it's a long session, and then you don't want to add a bunch of testing because weightlifting sessions can take them, you know, 3 hours to complete on Monday. Discussions about more sporadic testing, so a few times a year, pulls on the force plates where they're actually doing clean pulls, snatch pulls, or squatting on the force plates, just adding to the data we're collecting because they would already be doing those pulls, and we just have them stand on top of some force plates that are, you know, it's minimally invasive.
Yeah, that's true. It has to be acceptable for the athletes to, because otherwise it's very hard to get good quality data. Do you collect any data on volume or other aspects of the training? And if so, how you go about, or why and how then you use them?
Yeah, so and Spencer is very into Excel and Google Sheets. And so all of our training programs are kind of structured the same way, where it actually collects some number of reps, intensity for the specific lifts. Did you actually hit your goal for that week in volume or intensity? Like there's all that stuff is actually collected within the training sheets, which we don't ever get rid of. They're all stored in our Google Drive. And I've created some SQL database where I have all of that stuff being pulled in this database so that I can pull it if I need to. And that is, you know, one of the more things we're going to try to use in the near future is looking at the actual parameters of training, so volume and intensity, and how that relates to performance. Because the idea behind all of this is to help our coaches be able to write better training programs. And the way they're going to do that is knowing how their current training programs are affecting their athletes, which we look at through our testing.
Awesome. So you said volume, intensity.
Yeah. And so when it comes to an intensity across, whether it's, you know, we have intensity, we have volume, but we also have that stuff broken down for specific exercises. So squat, pulls, snatches, clean and jerks. So if you wanted to look at a more nuanced, like the volume or intensity of specific exercises, we also collect that as well.
So how you prepare reporting of it? So I don't know, every month it kind of spits out, well, how you do it. I want to know how you do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the way our training it works is, you know, we have a Google Sheet, like say, Alex, I wrote you this training plan, 16 weeks. You have a Google Sheet, and then each tab is a week. So week one is the tab, and in that tab, it has all your volume intensity that's been calculated from the training I've put in. And then week two, the same thing. Week three, but then there's also a cover sheet that has like all of it from all 16 weeks. And so it's all, everything you need from that training cycle, it was collected from there, from when I enter the reps and sets and intensities, it calculates that, puts it in a cover sheet. And then I have, you know, some code written up that pulls it from the cover sheets and puts it in one spot. So then it can be analyzed and it's more organized in like a, you know, a data frame that you would analyze, where you have mesocycle, date, macrocycle, volume, whatever you need by a week or month or what have you.
How much do you actually know, and how much are you guessing, and what is in the I know bucket and what is in I'm guessing bucket?
Yeah, I consider myself kind of a data pessimist. I feel like we always don't know anything. Like even when, you know, I would say that something we consider like we confidently can say this or that, I'm still like, I don't know. Like was the measuring there? It's a little, you know, how much we know that, I guess that's athlete to athlete as we collect this data, because we've been doing it for a year. And to me, that's still not enough data. Like I want more data to draw conclusions and understand the athletes better. But we're starting to get to where, you know, specific athletes, we can kind of see like what, you know, when they are doing well in training, when they're moving the bar well, like what measures and testing are actually elevated or depressed. As far as we don't know, once again, I personally feel like everything, I feel like there's a lot we still need to learn, you know, as we build out more weightlifting specific movements or using the velocity units. I feel like there's a lot there to be gained. Specifically, I think looking at continuous like time series data and kind of comparing time series curves will yield a lot of insight into performance. Compared to, say, you perform a clean pull, we're trying to increase your velocity and say we do 100% on your clean pull. If I just get it gives me a medium velocity, we don't know what part of your clean pull we actually improve. We just know at some point, somehow you increase mean velocity, but if we are able to analyze the continuous velocity time curve, we can see like, oh, you actually did improve your velocity around the knee, which is what we were aiming for. Or it could be, you know, we were trying to improve it around the knee, but really you just got better at the extension at the top. So I think that's something we don't know, but, you know, through doing weightlifting specific movements and using unique analyses, we'll be able to look at sport specific kind of positional improvements.
How different your approach would be from athlete to athlete? We know weightlifting is an individual sport. People have different qualities, even weightlifters. How different the athletes could be and how it will inform how you go about the analyzing or using the data?
Yeah, so off the top of my head, me and Spencer are about to put a blog out on the Power and Grace website actually kind of answering this question. A good example would be if we have two athletes and one is to say they are kind of producing the same amount of power, but one is definitely more like force driven and one is more velocity driven. So one moves really fast, one produces a lot of force that doesn't necessarily move as fast. Well, you want to, their training may look very different. And so just thinking of squatting, Spencer may prescribe them, say, the athlete that, you know, has high force measures on the force plate jumps, but their impulse is kind of low, which just may mean that they're producing a lot of force, just not in a timely fashion. He may prescribe squats using the velocity unit that he believes will help make up that deficiency so they can start, you know, squatting the same weights but faster. And hopefully that'll carry it over to their weightlifting. And so the way we may measure that or kind of assess whether he is actually increasing those abilities or masking those deficiencies is we may look at some of those metrics beforehand from, say, the jump. So see if pre to post that training intervention, they are actually increasing, say, like their concentric impulse. It may be force stayed the same, but impulse increased. So now they're actually producing the force in a more timely fashion, which, you know, in weightlifting, you have to produce lots of force, but you need to do it quickly, right? And so it is, you know, it's not like we have controls or it's not a randomized control trial or anything. So it's kind of hard to like very definitively say cause and effect. This led to this, but over time, more data we collect, say it does that repetitively for different athletes, we kind of get a good idea of, is this actually improving them? And then you might have, say, the other athlete that, you know, can move her squats very fast, very explosive athlete, but maybe their actual like maximum squatter, maximal force is not as high as you'd like it to be. Well, they may be getting training that's more looking at enhancing just absolute force, trying to enhance those peak force metrics. And so, you know, pre to post, we may look at did peak force and say their squat jump, the concentric peak force, did we increase it, or the velocity, the mean velocity at their 80% squat, did we increase that velocity, that sort of thing. And then as we implement, say, a test pre and post where they do a clean pull at different loads or snatch pull on the force plates, we can kind of once again see how force and velocity metrics are changing, how those may be differential for, say, I may have certain deficiencies, you may have certain deficiencies. Well, the metrics I'm going to look at may then be different to see if, you know, we're actually addressing these holes in their physical makeup.
Yeah, I think it will lead nicely to the questions I have from evidence from community patrons. So there are two. I will read them so I will not mess them up. So the first one is, what are some ratios you guys found to signal an athlete needs to focus on a specific area? For example, if back squat to total, clean and jerk, whatever, is below something the athlete needs to focus on.
Yeah, so that's when the way I communicate a lot of this data, it's mostly to Spencer because he's the in-person coach at our headquarters. You know, we kind of discuss their metrics, where they might be deficient. And the way we look at that is we have all this data across a bunch of athletes. We kind of now start to look at where they're at in our athlete pool and see if they're kind of, you know, on the lower end, on the higher end. I think specific to like the squat or clean and jerk, we're looking at ratios. I think a lot of the time with a lot of our athletes, like say if it's an athlete we feel like needs to get stronger, needs to be able to have a higher peak force. If their back squat is kind of close to their clean or they're getting pinned by cleans, it's like, well, we need to increase their peak force. And, you know, coming from a East Tennessee State education where they're all about squatting, I think that's one thing I took away from school is you can never be too strong in the squat if you're a weightlifter. So yeah, it's a lot of more so once we have, say, athlete on the data on two macro cycles, then we kind of see where they may be deficient. And we kind of compare it to athletes we have that are of a similar capabilities or a similar skill level. Say you're a athlete that's at the USA Nationals level, you qualify for that meet. We have a lot of other athletes that we've tested that qualify for that. We kind of see where you're at and there's certain metrics or physical components that you're deficient in. Maybe, okay, well, why don't we see if we can increase these and get you closer to like, you know, at least the average within our athlete pool, or maybe blowing it out the water. Like you have the highest peak force by far. Maybe we can allocate some of our training to an area that you're deficient and just kind of maintain that. So a lot of that is just repetitive collection where we have enough data on the athlete where we kind of look at it compared to other athletes. So yeah.
So correct me if I'm understanding right. You look more into addressing the limiting factor, and you use mainly, instead of ratios within one athlete, you look at this athlete across, let's say, two mesocycles, comparing to the other athletes of similar level and how they kind of, what qualities they express and what is an average for this level of athlete?
So that's exactly right. So as we collect more data, we can kind of look at where they're at within the athlete pool, and that may kind of tell us where you're deficient, which, you know, is obviously biased because maybe it's just the way we coach. So you could all be deficient in a certain area. But I mean, a lot of it is just, you know, stuff that coaches have been doing forever, weightlifting without all the fancy equipment. Is their front squat super close to their clean? Is their pull very weak compared to their squat? And so they're like, they're not able to have enough giddy up on the bar during the pull to rack it or receive it. A lot of it comes from that. But as, you know, if we were talking, say, 6 months from now, you know, we've had the more sport-specific testing that we plan on implementing, I think that may be a little bit more like finding some of those type of ratios where we may be able to address. So looking at specifically to certain points during the snatch pull or clean pull or the squat, whether it be force or velocity, kind of looking at maybe there's comparisons there that we can address and find out, oh, you know, actually this movement, a ratio around here, whereas the ones that struggle standing up a clean actually have a ratio around here. So I think that's actually a pretty good idea for the future.
Okay, the second question is, how do you use data from barbell velocity in long-term perspective, both in terms of session to session and cycle to cycle?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty relevant question. I, as of this week, have been pulling a lot of the velocity data and looking at ways we can use it to basically look at, you know, what this person is asking. How can we use it cycle to cycle or even session to session? Because there's some athletes that basically, if they're squatting, they're collecting it on our velocity device, right? So we have all their squats. You know, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that can be looked at from a practical setting. Actually, just looking through some of the data for an athlete yesterday, kind of exploring it, I think there's stuff as, you know, as narrowed down as exercise selection. So whether you squat 2 days a week and front squat or back squat 2 times a week and front squat once versus back squat once, front squat twice, how has that changed kind of the velocity of those lifts? Is that may go into exercise selection or cycle to cycle, looking at the mesocycles, maybe looking at, you know, program efficacy. So you would expect after, say, a strength and endurance styled mesocycle, you would probably expect some velocities at a given load to be depressed because you just can't move the barbell as fast because you're fatigued, or you should be moving 75% squat faster towards the tail end when we're trying to get closer to peaking for competition. So I think there's a lot there. Looking at a big picture, like good weightlifting coach, it's going to add like a tiny little puzzle piece to the entire training process. But that little puzzle piece, you know, may be what they need to get their athlete from not on the podium to the podium, or not qualifying for something, USA, Team USA or Nationals to qualifying. So I like to think of it as that way, but it's definitely not just to like overtake our coach's entire philosophy or ability a program. Yeah. It's just when they make decisions, there's some uncertainty they have to weigh, and hopefully we can decrease some of that uncertainty and kind of help them make those decisions a little more accurately.
Or even in terms of hypothesis testing. So this is how we, the coach, is planning to go about addressing some deficiencies or improving some skills in an athlete, and then looking back through the data and seeing whether what he or she was planning actually happened. That can't happen without the data, especially in...
Oh, yeah.
You can't be max testing your athlete every week to see...
Yeah.
Makes no sense. So the data can be helpful in that way.
Yeah, you know, and that's, I feel like that's the big benefit we found thus far is when I am communicating this data to Spencer, and maybe sometimes he may have had kind of an anecdotal hypothesis of when he manipulated this training variable, it yielded this athlete enhancing their ability, and saying they look more explosive or whatever. And now we can actually retroactively go back and say, here's the data, you know, your assumption was correct. Or it may be based off the data and the, I kind of talk from the data point of view, the coach, Spencer in this instance, may talk from the coach point of view, the kind of training prescription. Well, here's the data, here's what you prescribe to them. You may want to adjust this a little bit at this time because you can see they are kind of falling off a little too soon, or, you know, this kind of athlete monitoring metrics, then kind of follow a trend that would be ideal to them peaking performance. And then from there, the next macro cycle, the coach may be, oh, I need to, instead of tapering off squats at this point in the mesocycle, maybe I need to do it now, or, you know, what have you, specific to that athlete.
Yeah, yeah. On that topic, could you elaborate a little bit on your relationship with Spencer in terms of how much you talk, what kind of conversations are they, like a relationship of a sports scientist with a coach?
Yeah, so it helps a lot. I've known Spencer for about a decade now. I actually met him when I got into weightlifting, and, you know, so we've been friends for a long time. So we already have that rapport and that relationship, but he is also very interested in this type of stuff. He is just a very busy person. And so I'm more embedded in this field, but he's very receptive to this stuff. He's understanding that this is useful. And I think that's a huge part. If you were, say, a coach that wanted to start some type of athlete monitoring or data collection, you would probably want to have some buy-in of the other coaches that you're trying to help. And, you know, the best way to do that would be to communicate it in a way that they actually understand, like, oh, this isn't contradicting me or trying to contradict me or say I'm a bad coach. It's trying to help me be a coach or confirm my coaching or my training prescription. And so me and Spencer, I usually every Saturday morning I am in the gym, and I usually see him then. But, you know, if there's anything, sometimes if I'm analyzing data and something sticks out, I think it's cool and something we need to talk about, I might shoot him a text, and then he loves to shoot back a voice memo or that sort of thing. So we're in pretty regular communication, but it does help that, you know, we had a relationship before I was kind of in this line of work.
I'm having last two questions for the last 20 minutes. What is your favorite color?
Favorite? I don't know. I guess I'd say green. It's kind of one of the Power and Grays colors, so it works. But I don't know. I don't think anybody wants to hear me say black or gray. It'd be kind of dull. So I would say green. We'll go with green as my favorite color.
Awesome. Green it is. And last question, where people can find you if they want to get in touch or look at your work?
I would say the best place to see some of the stuff we're doing is to follow the Power and Grace Performance Instagram account. So we're trying to put up more content kind of around the sports science stuff we're doing, because it might be interesting or helpful to the weightlifting community. If you need to contact me personally, you can find me on Instagram at JASlayton. I'm not on there very frequently, so if you really want to contact me, I just recommend emailing me, jake@powerandgraceperformance.com. If you have any questions or want to chat about any of this, I will ramble with you for a long time, so just be prepared. But yeah, this type of stuff, if you want to kind of see what we're doing, see what Power and Grace has in the works sports science wise I recommend following our Instagram. Our director of ops, Grace Jenkins, she does a good job of curating a lot of that content. We have a blog on our website, powerandgraceperformance.com, where, you know, we're trying to post more kind of case studies, how to set up data analysis framework, how to calculate measurement error, how to set up an SOP for testing, kind of what we're doing, stuff like that, that we think is interesting, but also could be helpful to other coaches that may want to collect some type of performance data. Those would probably be the best places.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Jake.
Yeah, no, really appreciate you having me.
Thank you.